in the famous verse in the 10th canto where the gopis are glorifying a certain hill. How do you know it's Govardhan? It's not said. But by the context, you are fully entitled to say, this is Govardhan Hill. Oh, such a great hill, such a dearest devotee of the Lord, providing the Lord and his associates with fruits and grasses and minerals and caves. How do you know it's Govardhan? You know by the process of elimination, by the context. Similarly, you know that it was Prishnigarbha who appeared to Dhruva by the process of elimination. How many other avatars were there appearing during the reign of Swayambhuva Manu? They all are accounted for except this one. So this is the one who appeared to Dhruva. Otherwise, Baladeva Vidyabhusan says, you could question this Lord who appeared to Dhruva. Did he suddenly come down from Vaikuntha? Or did he apparently take birth from a mother and father? Once you understand this is Prishnigarbha, then everything is clear. So, Dhruva saw the Lord, Prishnigarbha. His motivation was a demand. Powerful demands he had. Revenge, putting someone in his place, greatest kingdom. But when he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything changed. He was purified. He described that my senses were asleep. I can understand that now upon seeing you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I can understand that before, although I thought I was awake, my senses were actually sleeping. And then he began to lament. What a fool am I. I was so determined to perform austerities and penances to get darshan of the Supreme Lord, who can end the cycle of repeated birth and death. But I was so foolish, I was worshiping that Lord for things that would perpetuate the cycle of repeated birth and death. What a fool I was. I was searching for broken pieces of glass instead of the greatest jewel. Verse after verse, Dhruva laments like that. How could I have ever been so foolish to approach the Lord with such material demands? Now, the Lord, from his side, did not take the demands of Dhruva so seriously. Krishna is not insensitive. Krishna is not some kind of harsh person. No, the Lord understood. Dhruva, he's just a child. I don't take it seriously, his childish ambitions. But what I do take seriously is the devotion, the bhakti that he has rendered for me. So that was Krishna's attitude as Prishnigarbha. Still, Dhruva is a devotee, and so he's lamenting. Even though I'm seeing the Supreme Lord, how could I have had such crazy desires? So Srila Prabhupada points out that all devotees should be careful. You don't want to end up lamenting like Dhruva Maharaj. Of course, you might say, hey, if I get a chance to see the Lord, so what if I have this desire, that demand, that desire, that demand? It doesn't matter. I'm seeing God. But remember, more important than seeing God is your behavior after you see God. It may be a little hard to understand. I just want to see God. I just want to experience God. Actually, that is not the best Krishna consciousness. The best Krishna consciousness is, whether I see God or not, how am I going to serve the Supreme Lord? Let me see service. Therefore, Prahlad, when he saw the Supreme Lord Nrisingadev, he immediately clarified his position. I am eternally your servant. You are eternally my master. We have no other relationship than this. This is the important, this is the most important thing in bhakti. What are you going to do once you see the Supreme Lord? Ordinarily, as I said, it would seem so extraordinary. Just let me see God. But in Krishna consciousness, that's actually not such a big deal. And as we pointed out in the beginning of this class, even the neophyte is seeing God. So you can drink some water. Rasaham apsukonteya. Krishna's a taste in water. Okay, now I have seen Krishna. But the question is, what am I going to do now? What's my service? You see? So since that is the question, even after you've seen Krishna, you might as well ask yourself the question now. Because eternally, that's going to be the way it is. What is my service to the Lord? How can I give pleasure to the Lord's senses? Anyway, we can go on and on about this subject matter. As I said in the beginning of class, I'm preparing this seminar about seeing Krishna for the Ukraine Festival in Odessa. Narendra Maharaj, His Holiness, is kindly keeps me engaged in devotional service there. And also for the Russian festival in Divnomors. So there we have like 5 or 6 days of 2-hour sessions. So today is just, just churning the waters a bit, and you're helping me by shaping the subject matter. All right, we can see if you have some questions. Is that what goes on, or? Are there any questions, comments, illuminations from our exalted senior Vaishnavas?
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for...
Is his microphone up high? Makanlal Prabhu wants to say something.
Hare Krishna. First, I wanted to thank you for the most amazing class and pointing out such important points as hearing about Krishna is the same as seeing him. This is a really important point, so... In fact, I think this is probably one of the best classes I've ever heard you give, as a matter of fact. So I just want to express my appreciation for the really perfect Siddhanta. Maybe some of the new devotees don't realize that every single point that Maharaj made is backed by Srila Prabhupada. That's what we call disciplic succession. In other words, also I'll say that Prabhupada did create pure devotees in... as disciples. That doesn't mean they have to be Mahabhagwat or infallible, doesn't mean they have to be fully self-realized, but pure devotees, yes, because that's something that Srila Prabhupada personally told me. I asked him a question. I said, if somebody purely follows your instructions, are they to be considered pure devotees? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes. So we are in association with pure devotees of the Lord. Again, it doesn't mean that they have to be a Mahabhagwat or Uttamadhikari, but who purely follows such a person is to be considered pure devotee. So we're very fortunate in that regard. And I'm appreciating this perfect Siddhanta that Maharaj is presenting in a very tasteful and sweet way. Very nice. I also wanted to point out one thing about the story about Dhruva Maharaj in that purport, same purport where Prabhupada speaks of the lamentation of Dhruva Maharaj. He also points out, or actually maybe it must be later in the Bhagavatam, that Prabhupada points out that we have to be very careful what we desire, because actually, even if we have a material desire and then become purified, as Dhruva Maharaj did, Krishna may still elect to fulfill our material desire. So it's therefore we have to be very careful, even as neophyte devotees, we have to be very careful, because later Krishna might fulfill that desire. To be specific, he had desired the death of his mother. He was stepmother. He was so angry and furious because it all started by her refusing to allow Dhruva Maharaj to sit on his father's lap, even though his father was the king. And There was no higher authority, since in those days the king was considered God incarnate, more or less. So there was no higher authority. That's why his mother said, well, you're going to have to go to God, because your father's already the emperor of the planet, so there's no higher authority on the earthly level. So he desired the death of his stepmother. And he also was so upset with his half, so envious of his half-brother, who got to sit on his father's lap. He was so envious, he also desired the death or revenge, as Maharaj put it, against his half-brother. So later, when Dhruva Maharaj was the emperor, after his darshan with Lord Vishnu, as Maharaj pointed out, he lost all those material desires, but the point is Lord Vishnu insisted in fulfilling them. Specifically, Dhruva Maharaj's half-brother went out on a hunting expedition somewhere up in the Himalayas, and he was killed by I think it's yakshas. Just one yaksha killed him, his half-brother. That was a result of his previous desire before he became fully self-realized. Furthermore, then his mother, seeing that her son did not come home, became very anxious. She feared something had happened, and she went out looking for him, and she was killed also. Was it a tiger, wasn't it? So she was also killed.
Forest fire.
Eh?
Forest fire.
Oh. So those desires were fulfilled, even though he no longer had those desires. So that's is a very important purport by Prabhupada. We're saying, therefore, be careful what you desire.
Question?
Once again, I also want to thank you, Maharaj, for a nice lecture. What Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita, that man manabhava mad bhakto madhyaji man namaskur, with goal of our practice devotional service. So you give the example, like, here's the cup of water and rasahamapsu count every drink, and well, what's now, what do I do now, what's my service, like that. But what if, I mean, if you can elaborate a little bit on this, if it's already devotional service, because if you remember the Lord, it's one of Anga, of Nine, remembering Vishnu Smaranam. So, and it's connection with this verse of what man manabhava, man bhakto. So, if someone really, like you also give this example of what Chaitanya, who saw the ocean and remember Yamuna and all these things. So, what if the Lord is satisfied already with such a attitude and or such a vision of devotee?
Satisfied with what attitude and vision?
Well, if you remember him when you're drinking water.
Yes, okay, so I drink the water, rasamap sukantaya. All right, now, what's my next service? In other words, not that I'm going to enjoy Krishna, but how am I going to continue pleasing Krishna's senses?
Yeah, but we have example, for example, Prahlad Maharaj, who is always engaged in Vishnu Smaranam, he's always remembering Krishna. So if we, in the word Krishna say also, the my pure devotees see me in everything and everything in me, and that way. So my question is, there maybe we can find examples that devotees who satisfy the Lord with such a vision.
But that vision is one of service. There's no vision for a devotee except service.
So that's my point, that maybe that vision is already service. It's Vishnu Smaranam.
Yes, so after I remember Vishnu by drinking the water, what next? What's the next way I'm going to serve Krishna? And the intensity of my desire to serve Krishna, that will produce the various levels of intensity in my seeing Krishna. So in other words, just by drinking the water and saying Krishna's a taste in water, my business is not over. What do I do next? Hmm. How do I remember Krishna next? That is the question. Bhakti is dynamic. So how am I going to go on in Krishna's service? Other question? Yes?
Maharaj, you were very nicely explaining about Lord's Antilila pastimes, wherein he feels intense separation for meeting Lord Krishna. And seeing all these leelas or hearing about them, we feel that so many wonderful activities he does, that he floats in the ocean all throughout the night and his limbs become elongated, and so many symptoms of Mahabhava are manifested. But somewhere down the line, when a devotee thinks about these things, he comes to a conclusion that this is Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anything is possible for him. So there's not a discrimination between, like, this is Supreme Personality of Godhead, but actually he's in the mood of separation. Everything is possible for the Lord, but where is he in the mood of separation? So how can we become convinced that there is a separation between that he is the Supreme Lord, everything is possible to him, at the same time he's in the actual mood of separation?
Yes, Lord Chaitanya is in the mood of separation from Krishna, and so?
But the symptoms manifested is possible. It's not possible for mundane spirit soul. It's possible for Supreme Lord. So how can we discriminate between that? That it's obvious to him, it's so casual to him that he can exhibit all these symptoms, but we cannot as spirit souls. So how can we become convinced that he's actually in separation, that he's manifesting the symptoms of pure devotional service?
How can we be convinced that
he's actually manifesting those the symptoms of love?
Making things too complicated. The situation is quite simple. You take Kaviraj Goswami's explanations. You don't disturb Lord Chaitanya by treating him as the supreme enjoyer. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna in the mood of Krishna's dearest devotee. That's all that's required to understand. Lord Chaitanya is demonstrating Mahabhava, an intensity of love of Krishna that's available only to basically Srimati Radharani. So that is the explanation, the presentation given by Kaviraj Goswami. We just heard this morning, I was reading, how Kaviraj Goswami explains even Krishna himself cannot understand the depths of this ocean. But then he comes as his own devotee and he understands it. So it's very clear. Your coach is here. They will help you with this question. Oh, a separate question.
Maharaj, you are speaking very nicely about feeling separation of Krishna. We see that the materialistic people whom we are supposed to preach Krishna consciousness, they are feeling separation of sense gratification. So they are intensely absorbed in feeling separation of sense gratification. So how do you, you know, give this understanding to them that there is a better option of feeling separation of Krishna unless they have experience of Krishna? They have no experience of Krishna, so how they will understand this principle? So how do we give this understanding?
Yes, therefore this subject matter is only for devotees. Srila Prabhupada was so expert that he taught in a few minutes, he taught George Harrison something about love of Krishna and separation. Of course, George Harrison was a devotee, as Srila Prabhupada said. He had done great service. So Prabhupada explained to him that love of Krishna and separation is like you're in the sunlight and you're feeling the intensity of the sun. And then all of a sudden the sun disappears behind a cloud. What do you feel then? You feel separation from the sun. You're still in connection to the sun, but you feel, where is the sun? The sun is gone. So you're feeling the sun in separation. I remember, two memories come to my mind. I was during the communist days in Europe, this is in the early 80s, I was meeting some devotees in Prague, in former Czechoslovakia, and they had traveled by train 12 hours, and we met in Prague just to sit in a parked car for 2 days and talk about Krishna, because we couldn't go to any hotels, everything was so dangerous. So we just sat in a parked car for 2 days, and we talked about Krishna, and everyone was completely satisfied, showing you how in the most austere circumstances your heart can be completely fulfilled just by hearing about Krishna. No one complained. We traveled 12 hours by train just to sit in a parked car on a street in Prague and talk about Krishna. No one complained like that. Everyone was so happy. Wow, we got to hear about Krishna. So I was explaining this point, that explanation Prabhupada gave to George Harrison about the sun. How suddenly the sun disappears and you feel acutely separation from the sun. While I was saying that, all of a sudden the sun disappeared. And right at that very moment, as I was explaining the example, the devotees were just ecstatic, because I could see that Krishna in their heart was giving them some realization of what the subject matter was about. Although materially their circumstances were completely oppressive and harsh, still the Lord was entering in to their situation and giving them realization of Krishna consciousness. So I never forgot that. Right at that very moment when we made that point, suddenly the sun disappeared, and I can see in the eyes of the devotees, they caught the point. I caught it too. So based on that example that Prabhupada gave to George Harrison, he later went on to make his music, you know, My Sweet Lord. There was another song also he did, I Miss You, Lord Krishna, Where Are You? So I remember I was doing book distribution as a Sankirtan devotee in 1974, and it was a George Harrison concert. So we would go to these big arenas. I believe this one was Providence, Rhode Island. Big arena, maybe 20,000, minimum 15,000 people for the concert. And so as book distributors, we would, you know, load up books in our big bags and we'd go into the concert. We had a ticket and then we'd start distributing to all the people. The best spot before the concert started was outside the door to the bathroom. You know, they would have in these arenas, they'd have these huge bathrooms, like 20 stalls. And so at first, we realized that just stand by the door, and because all the people want to go to the bathroom first, so they don't have to go during the concert. So we just wait right outside the door. Excuse me, take a look at this, give them a book. And this is why we would distribute books. Then we became even bolder. We'd go right inside the bathrooms. And then as the men were approaching, you know, to pass water, and so we'd spend the first 45 minutes before the concert started, you know, distributing books outside the bathroom or in the bathroom, and then the concert would start, and we would go up and down the rows, distributing to the people on both sides of the aisles, because the seats are too close. You can't go in the rows. So we'd have to just go up and down the ends of the rows. So while I was doing that, George was on stage. He was with Ravi Shankar. And he started announcing his next number. I'm going to sing a song about Krishna. This song is called I Miss You, Lord Krishna, Where Are You? Immediately I had an idea. Oh, this is going to be huge for distribution. I immediately went to where I had my boxes of books stashed. I got about 50 paperback Krishna books. And I was waiting. And so when he finished his song, I Miss You, Lord Krishna, Where Are You? I started calling out, Krishna book, Krishna book. And 100 people got out of their seats and charged me and pressed me up against the wall, thrusting money in my face. And in 5 minutes, they had purchased 100 Krishna books. So I remember that example because I could see all this happened because of the potency of Srila Prabhupada's explanation, a simple explanation to George Harrison, created this huge mega event where people were actually mobbing me. They're pressing me against the wall, thrusting money in my face. And after 5 minutes, I was minus 100 books. So let us also appreciate the simplicity of Krishna consciousness and not try to make everything so complicated and intricate all the time. Sometimes things are said very simply and it requires years of contemplation. I find that particularly true about many things Srila Prabhupada said. They're spoken in simple English, but they're so deep that it requires many years of just thinking about them. Just like this example about the sun, feeling separation from the sun to help you understand what it's like, love of Krishna in separation. You can think about that a long time. Other questions?
Yes, Maharaj. Hare Krishna. You also make some very simple statement, so very deep word. So when you said, once you make a choice, you are swept away. Though we made a choice, but neither we are here nor we are there. So what to do?
This is a classic Mahaprabhu question. These questions have been going on since time immemorial. After 20 years, some things don't change. Bhakti yoga is not performed by being neither here nor there. Bhakti yoga involves commitment, just like any personal relationship. You have to commit yourself. You have to daily perform activities to verify the relationship, to nourish the relationship. Then you actually have a relationship. A relationship is a dynamic thing. It's a situation of increasing commitment, increasing awareness. And Krishna is the Supreme Person. So certainly these things apply to our service in relationship to Krishna. You can't be ambivalent. Ambivalent means maybe, maybe not. Maybe I'll serve Krishna, maybe not. Try that in your home life. Maybe I'm your father, maybe not. Maybe I'm your husband, maybe not. Would you call that genuine family life? Of course not. You are the father, you are the husband, and you have to act in certain ways. Similarly, bhakti is like that. You are a devotee of Krishna. You have obligations in service. So what he's bringing out is that sometimes devotees become weak due to lack of hearing the holy name, and then they fall into this kind of mental platform. I don't know. Yeah. I know that doesn't happen to anyone here. It's only in the other countries. A devotee is always identifying with service, and that identification with service gives the increased strength. As soon as the service drops off, then you find the relationship becomes weak. So as long as the devotee is always choosing service, then you find yourself swept up more and more in the ways flowing towards Krishna. And as soon as you stop choosing service, then you start to get carried the other way. There's no neutral ground. There's no plateau. It's either one way or the other. You're either swept away by the ways of service to Krishna. Ultimately, those ways become the bhava taranga, the waves of ecstatic love, or you're swept away by the waves of Maya. Existence is dynamic. Whether you're in Maya or you are in Krishna consciousness, existence is dynamic. There's no neutral ground, twilight zone in between, in which you're neither here nor there. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Just now you explained to us what is important, most important in Bhakti Yoga is to continue to serve Krishna in every situation, performing service. So my question is, how to perform our services in service attitude? For example, like giving pravachan is also service, but whether we are giving pravachan in the mode of service, not in the mode of enjoyment. Distributing books is also service, but whether we are distributing books in the mode of service. So can you give some tips where we can really develop service attitude, doing all services in service attitude?
Service attitude means to think of the senses of the person you're trying to serve. Very practical. Krishna has senses. When Krishna enters the forest in Vrindavan, when he's leaving the village, the forest serves his senses. The forest knows Krishna is coming. He's Madhava. Madhava means, besides the consort of the goddess of fortune, Madhava also means spring. So since Madhava is coming to the forest, I, as the forest, will display Madhava, spring, even more. So then the forest sends out in ever-increasing waves of service all the things that are juicy for Krishna's senses. The first of all, the forest of Vrindavan looks very beautiful for Krishna's eyes. And then the forest sends out sounds for Krishna's ears, the sounds of the birds and the bees. And then the forest sends out fragrances through the air carried by the wind for Krishna's nose. The forest even satisfies Krishna's sense of touch by sending out through the wind tiny droplets of water from the Jamuna River. So in this way, the forest serves the senses of the Lord. So how to keep a service attitude? Always think of Krishna's senses. How is what I'm doing pleasing to the senses of the Lord? To do that, we have guidance. That's why Krishna says, in order to render devotional service, you need guidance from a devotee to keep you on track in thinking about Krishna's pleasure. Otherwise, we can tend to become a bit lost between serving me and serving Krishna. I want to be fulfilled, therefore I'm doing this service. I want to be pleased with myself, therefore I'm doing this service for Krishna. That is not pure devotional service. Thinking about Krishna's senses means thinking, what do Krishna's senses need right now from me? To make that clear to the devotee has the guru. The guru points out, this is the best thing for Krishna's senses right now. Our whole system of devotional service in practice, archana paddhati, that is all, that system is meant for training your senses to serve Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. Even if you do it mechanically, the system will still purify you. Even when done mechanically. But why do something mechanically? Why not put your heart into it? But the fact is, the bhakti is so powerful, even when done mechanically, if you stick to it, spontaneous love can arise from that. If you stick to it. The problem with mechanical devotional service is that it often devotees don't stick to it because they don't get enough taste for them to conquer over their material senses. Still, if you're doing sadhana mechanically, if you stick to it, even though it's done mechanically, by your persistence, things will change to spontaneity. This is how powerful bhakti is. But better from the very beginning, you try to do things from your heart. I'm offering this to Krishna. I'm offering this to my spiritual master. He'll offer it to Krishna. Because this service is for Krishna, let me do it to my best ability. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for a wonderful presentation on remembering Krishna. My question is regarding the example of the unripe mango. So we have an unripe mango, and you said that practice is the only thing that is required for change, practice. So then you said that what changes is that our attitude would change, our emotions would change, and Krishna's reciprocation with us would change.
Yes.
So could you kindly elaborate on this, how our attitude can change, how our emotions could change, and how Krishna's reciprocation with us could change?
As the unripe mango becomes ripe, our attitude changes from considering devotional service to be like, oh, you gotta do it, otherwise everyone thinks you're in Maya. You gotta do it. You gotta chant 16 rounds, otherwise it won't let you come to the Pune festival. You gotta do it, otherwise all the other Prabhus look down on you. That changes, that attitude changes into, I love to do this. This is the natural thing to do. How do your emotions change? Instead of, for example, lusting for your senses, you begin to lust to give pleasure to Krishna. And when you look around, you don't see opportunities for your sense gratification, you see opportunities for Krishna's pleasure. You don't become angry anymore that you're not getting what you need for you. You become angry that Krishna is not getting his due recognition or Krishna is being offended. So in this way, your emotions change. And then Krishna's reciprocation towards you changes because you're becoming more of a devotee, so Krishna can show more affection to you. Krishna is more anxious for you to go back to Godhead than you are. In time, that becomes known. Therefore, Dvaitacharya told Kamalakanta Vishvas, you have just gotten the personal dealings of Lord Chaitanya. Never mind, he said, you'll never see him again. He dealt with you personally. How great is this? In time we will see that Krishna is more eager for us to go back to Godhead than we are ourselves. Right now you may think, yes, I want to go back to Godhead, I really want to go, but Krishna makes it so difficult. If Krishna is really God, why doesn't he just snap his fingers and I'm back to Godhead immediately? Why do we have to go through these struggles? Krishna is the most expert lover. He knows how to produce the best love. But we think we know all about love. Real humility means to understand that we practically don't know anything about love. Krishna has to teach us. Arrogance means, I know all about pleasure. I know all about love. In the Western countries, they'll even say like that. Pleasure, I know about pleasure. I know about love. In India, it's more subtle, you know, more under the surface. But basically, every conditioned soul has this arrogance. I know what life's about. I know what pleasure is. I know what love is. But the process of bhakti yoga shows you that you don't know, and Krishna will teach you. Therefore, Advaitacharya is telling Kamalakanta Vishwas, don't be unhappy that Lord Chaitanya just told you you'll never see him again. He's teaching you love. He's teaching you about love. You're unhappy because you don't understand. Take all the gifts that the Lord personally gives, whether it's so-called happiness or so-called distress. It's personally coming from him in a process that's meant to produce the best love. All right. Last, this is a Mahaprabhu question.
Maharaj, you said that we should not do devotional service or chanting or kirtan or even class mechanically. Then how to do from heart? Many times we do things because we have to do it, whether we are chanting, whether we are doing kirtan, or we give class. So how to reach to that stage?
That's a very good question. When you put your heart into something, you show your care. Just watch, for example, a mother take care of her child. The heart is there. Looking out for the child's interests, nourishing the child, protecting the child. That attitude of the mother caring for the child is the closest thing to bhakti that you'll see in the material world. Such feeling is there. Such consideration, such patience. Even the child is throwing up on the mother's shoulder, and the mother doesn't mind. She takes it all to be nectar. This can teach you the attitude of a devotee. When you pay attention to your details, when you pay attention to the details of your service, that shows you care. Otherwise, you wouldn't pay attention. When you're doing something for Krishna, you pay attention to all the details of execution. That commitment to pay attention, that investment of your energies to pay attention, that's your heart. To pay attention, you have to care. To do the job nicely, that's your heart. Just like our Mahaprabhu, for so many decades, he tends to complicated legal affairs in Mumbai, requiring great concentration and perseverance. That shows where the heart is. Otherwise, one could easily say, so much trouble, so many complications. Anyway, Krishna's God, he can take care of himself. You can just go through the motions, you know, of doing the service. But that feeling of, let me take every step to try and please Krishna. Let me leave no stone unturned. That shows the heart. So we all have an opportunity to show heart in our service by how much we are conscientious, how much care we take in doing that service. That conscientiousness, that care begins when we chant our japa in the morning. When you chant japa, are you just doing it as a morning exercise, calisthenics? All right, you wake up, you take a shower, and then you gotta chant. Let's get it over with as quick as possible. What you can try doing this. You can think of how you feel when you do something you like to do. Whatever that is. Just think what you like to do. Talking with your favorite devotees, taking your favorite prasad. Just think about the state of mind you're in when you're doing something you like to do. And then have that same state of mind when you're chanting your japa. Like, I just don't want to be anywhere else. I don't want to do anything else except this. This is where I want to be right now, just chanting Hare Krishna. Transfer that attitude that you have when you're doing your so-called favorite activities, whatever it is, talking with your closest devotee associates. When you're really feeling, you know, just relaxed and happy and content, transfer that feeling to when you're chanting japa. Yes, this is life as it should be, chanting the holy names. There's nothing I'd rather be doing than this. Try it. It's very interesting. Otherwise, if you kind of tense up for japa time, okay, it's time for the morning battle. Oh, the holy name. We've got to chant. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. You get so tense, you know, like you're fighting a battle. Instead, think about how your consciousness is when you're doing your favorite devotee activity. I don't know, you know, eating pizza prasad or what? You know, talking with a dear, you know, god brother, whatever. You know what? Yeah. On parikrama in Braj, you know. Yeah, walking around Govardhan Hill, and then apply that attitude to your morning japa period. How would you like someone to do something for you with such a heavy, grudging attitude? Okay, Ekalavya, I'm doing this for you. Here, take this. I hope you like it. You wouldn't want that kind of a presentation or offering to you. So why do we do this to the holy name? So for proper chanting, put yourself into a proper state of mind. First of all, organize your physical setting so that you'll be there's no mental and physical disturbances around you, and then put your mind in the proper frame that this is a wonderful activity. There's nothing else I want to do now than to chant the holy name. There's nothing better for me to do. This is what I like to do. And then chant. Krishna will notice your attempts to have the proper affectionate, so to speak, attitude when you chant, rather than fighting with the holy name. The fighting with the holy name is based on our thinking. I realize over the years, our thinking, there's something else I'd rather be doing right now. Therefore, since I've got to chant, though, otherwise, you know, you're in Maya. I've got to chant because I made that initiation promise. But it's a fight because there's something else I'd rather be doing right now. And just think, what is that thing you'd rather be doing? What gives you that feeling of just everything is flowing and you're calm and content? Find an activity that you do that has that feeling and then apply that to your chanting. Every person has that feeling somewhere in their life in relation to some aspect. That is what you should be offering to Krishna. I don't want to be anywhere else. I don't want to do anything else except chanting the holy name. This is all I want right now. Nothing else. Krishna appreciates that attitude. But you fight with the holy name because you've got a, in your mind, you've got something else you want to do. Let me hurry up and get through with this. Then I can. Then you can what? Ask yourself that question. Then you can what? Do something you like to do instead of doing something for Krishna. Not for Krishna. You want to hurry up and finish chanting so you can get to do something you like to do. But what is that thing? Going to your office is very important. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is our problem. We come up with so many things we'd rather do except what Krishna wants us to do at the particular moment. So your focus, your daily focus begins by making peace with your japa period. This is the world peace formula. Make peace with your japa time. Not like it's a war. Oh. As we all know, Prabhus, we don't like to chant, but we have to. So we're going to force ourselves to chant. Get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And once we get through with the chanting, we can get on with our day. So, Prabhus, let's sit down and chant. Yes, it's amazing how we have that attitude, you know? So first, make peace with your japa time. Another thing you can do is to start your mental disposition for chanting the night before. When you take rest at night, prepare your mind for getting up in the morning and peacefully chanting. As you're going to sleep at night, you're thinking, tomorrow morning is going to be chanting of Hare Krishna. It's going to be very nice. This is what I want to do. I'm going to take enough rest so that I can hear with attention. I'm going to make sure there's no disturbances. Yes, that's what's going to happen when I wake up, chanting. And that way you get a head start on your mind. Instead of waiting till the morning time and then, oh, battle, it's time to fight. Prepare yourself the night before. You may find this works. Also, you can tell yourself, you can preach to yourself, look, just get used to it. I'm going to be chanting Hare Krishna every morning, at least. That's the way it's going to be. So, you just tell your mind, just leave me alone. This is the way it's going to be eternally. I'm going to be chanting Hare Krishna. So that's just the way it is. And since I'm going to be always doing it, I'm also going to like it. You see, the resistance against chanting and this feeling of a battle comes, as I said, because we think there's something better for us to do. So we want to get the chanting out of the way so we can do what we want to do for Krishna. But what happens if there's some nice, exquisite prasad? What is considered exquisite prasad here? A pizza prasad, no? Ice cream. Yes. I remember what the Chaupati Brahmacharis did at IIT. Let me tell you. I went to IIT with about 10 brahmacharis. Chaupati Mandir. And so we had a meeting with about, you know, 25 students. And so the students, of course, they were very well cultivated by the devotees. They were very nice. And so Garanga Prabhu, he had this idea that, Maharaj, we want you to just be alone with the students. So that they can express their doubts, you know, without us around. And this way they can, you know, say things that they may not want to say because we're around, but, you know, because you're a visitor, they may say these things to you. So, the students, they began asking me questions, you know, and they were revealing their minds, their doubts, and finally the real issue came out. If we become devotees, where will the pleasure be? How can we enjoy if we become devotees? Finally, in secret, you know, this all came out, you know. With the brahmacharis around, oh, they weren't going to say this. Because I was a visitor, you know, they didn't mind, you know. So that's what the anxiety was they had. Maybe we'd have to become brahmacharis and then there would be absolutely no pleasure. So, I explained to them, look, you know, it's only a minority of devotees who are brahmacharis. Don't worry. And I said, furthermore, why do you think the brahmacharis simply suffer? I said, just like, right, don't you know that we brought with us so much ice cream for everyone? And then I looked around, you know, are there any brahmacharis here who can explain that we have ice cream to serve to everyone? And then someone said, Maharaj, the brahmacharis are eating all the ice cream right now. So then I turned to the students. I turned to the students and said, you fools, here you are on the mental platform about how you're going to get pleasure, and meanwhile, little brahmacharis who are supposed to be suffering, they're eating all the ice cream. Just see. Here you are asking all these questions. How are we going to enjoy? Maybe we'll become brahmacharis. There'll be no pleasure. There'll be a harsh life. Meanwhile, the brahmacharis, they've just eaten all the ice cream. Well, you guys are mentally out. I never forgot that. It's a true story. I'm not exaggerating. You can ask them. Isn't it true? So, just take that attitude that you're eating nice ice cream prasad, surrounded by nice devotees. It's just such a nice atmosphere. So relaxing, so comfortable. Why can't we chant with that frame of mind? That is my point. When it's time to take ice cream prasad, do you put, okay, ice cream prasad. It's going to be a battle. Got to really focus properly. Ice cream. No, you relax completely. Oh, you know, this is going to be nice. Prabhu's there. Let's sit down. So why can't we have that very amicable, friendly, relaxed atmosphere in terms of our chanting? Why does it have to be like we're engaging in a hostile event, you know? We're going to fight the holy name. My point is that you can't say there's no point, there's no aspect of your life which doesn't have this relaxed attitude that I'm doing something I like very much. This is a nice scene. I feel very comfortable. There's some aspect of everyone's life that has these elements. Why can't that be for our chanting? That is my point. All right. You're not going to let me.
Hare. Thank you very much, Maharaj. Maharaj, you are speaking about from last two times about the tsunami, that wave that has come up. We can understand that the death can come at any time. So every time whenever you come to India, you speak about the economic development that is going on in India and all this liberalization process that is going on. Now even in devotees also, they get carried away with that economical development and they have to work very hard just to maintain their status quo. And sometimes, although being a devotee, we forget that the death can come at any time. So in that scenario, can you just give some light that what a devotee has to keep in his mind while doing his economical development in such a way that as far as his spiritual life has not been compromised and the borderline is very clear enough that he wants to finish his business?
A devotee knows that you can work, you can raise a family, you can do all these things, but your number one priority is your devotion to Krishna, particularly beginning with chanting the holy name. If you just keep the chanting of the holy name as the number one priority in your life, you'll find that all the other elements of your lifestyle will remain in proper focus. For example, why should I work too many hours if it's going to affect my japa time? Mm-hmm. Why should I increase my occupational endeavors if I see that it's going to affect the time that I should have for hearing and chanting Krishna's glories? So as long as you keep the chanting of Hare Krishna number one in the number one position of priority, automatically you'll find that the rest of the elements of your lifestyle stay in proper focus. If you keep your, as much as possible, keep your japa time sacrosanct, meaning nothing disturbs my time for chanting Hare Krishna, then that'll keep you on, that'll keep a simple lifestyle for you. Simple lifestyle meaning it doesn't endanger your spiritual development. But you'll notice, as soon as your life starts to get too complicated by economic endeavors, what's the first thing that goes? Attentive chanting of Hare Krishna. It goes right out the window. Finally, your rounds disappear completely. So the chanting of quality japa is your protection against this deluge of unnecessary economic expansion. Now, if a devotee can increase his economic options while maintaining his spiritual life, and those economic options are for giving added service to Krishna, well and good. But if not, then you shouldn't do it. You have to be honest with yourself. After all is said and done, whether you are just an ordinary worker in an office or you are a corporation head, the same test is there. How is my japa time being affected by this job? If you always keep the chanting of Hare Krishna as a number one priority, that'll protect you against this deluge of unnecessary economic expansion. Remember, Srila Prabhupada gives a very insightful definition of what is unnecessary economic expansion. He explained that lust is economic development on an organized scale. In other words, you have individual lust, and then you have the lust on a social level. Lust on a social level or mass level manifests in terms of unnecessary economic expansion. That's just the multiplication of individual lust. So this is what is trying to envelop everyone. Just like the individual fights a battle against individual lust, similarly you also have to fight a battle against social lust, unnecessary economic endeavors. So if you keep the holy name as the number one priority in your life, you'll be protected against all the kinds of lusts. Whether you are, just working a photocopy machine in someone's office, or you are corporate head, you watch your japa time, and that lets you know whether you're going overboard or not. I haven't found any better test than that. All right, here's the last question is written down. Sometimes devotees go to some places and feel that this place reminds them of Vrindavan or some other dham. Is this sahajism or natural? Anywhere where Krishna is glorified is a tirtha, so yes, it will remind you of the holy dham. Just like here, we haven't read in the Shastra of Punadam, is it there in some Purana? But because 1,500 or so devotees are here glorifying Krishna, then it becomes a holy place. They're piling up papers here with questions. But... All right. I'm very happy for the opportunity to have everyone's association. But I think we've done enough as far as my individual contribution for right now. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.